Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 233 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed, folks. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Founding member of Guns N' Roses, founding member of Velvet Revolver, founding member of Loaded. For the guy that the beer on The Simpsons is named after, Duff McKagan is going to be joining us here shortly. I had the pleasure of talking with this extraordinary personality yesterday, man, and I'm still, you know, flying high from it, man. We had a great conversation. I really hope you guys enjoy it. Actually, you know what? I don't hope, because I know that it's just fantastic, and you're gonna love it. You're gonna love it. We've got a couple of emails to get to really quick before we get into the meat of the show, and I'd like to start that right now because it's timely. It's timely. In the realm of where this show is concerned. So let's start out. This is from Michelle Weller, a listener here in Seattle. She says, let me start this email. Let me start this email. Never turns out well, right? Right? Yeah. Let me start this email with the fact that I am an avid listener to the show and look forward to every Monday when I get to listen and learn about new music while on my commute to work. Well, that's great, Michelle. Thank you so much. Michelle goes on. I have found recently that I am skipping ahead through your monologues at the beginning of each episode. Not that I find your personality and voice grating, but I just don't need it. Sometimes it makes the show lag for me, and I become somewhat disinterested in what the rest of the episode may hold. Have you thought about shortening this segment of the show, or maybe even adding something to it that can spice it up? You always say that you invite constructive criticism, so I hope this comes across as constructive and not the latter, because I really do love Air Raid. Signed, Michelle Weller of Seattle, Washington. Well, thank you, Michelle. Yes, that's why I'm reading this email at the top of the show, because you know what? I went back and I listened to a couple of the previous episodes, and man, am I a boring person when it comes to monologues and intros to this show. So we're going to be cutting it short. We're going to be cutting it short because that'll make the show better. And that's what it's all about, right? We're really not focusing on me. We're focusing on the guest. That's what this show is all about. We got another email. And this one is very succinct, and it's much more, much more criticism than constructive. And all it says is this: your intros suck. Signed, Dana. Thanks, Dana. I appreciate that. Well, not really. But you know what I mean. Dana, if you're listening, I'm completely aware. Completely aware. So we're going to be cutting these short because that's what the listeners want. And you know what? I was listening back and they are not good. A lot of them are not. Some of them are, it's gonna take a lot less time to do this show if I don't really have to do a monologue. But now I'm running long anyway, right? Hey, if you're new to the show, Keep in mind, we've got 233 episodes for your listening pleasure, free listening pleasure, by the way, right there at our website at www.air-raid.net. You can also find them on cairoradio.com, the wonderful radio station that we do this thing for. But if you go to our website, you can find, click on the archives tab, and you can find all 233 episodes with people like Chris Walla from Death Cab for Cutie. How about Macklemore or Mark Arm from Mudhoney? How about Lou Barlow from Dinosaur Jr. And Sebado? That was a great one, man. How about Buzz Osborne of the Melvins, man? Yeah, we've had a lot of great, great people on this show. It's and it keeps going, man. Like this week, Duff McKagan. It's going to be awesome. We have also got comedians like Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, Aisha Tyler, Mike Birbiglia, Pete Holmes, Hari Kondabolu, Eddie Pepitone, Duncan Trussell, all there for your listening pleasure right there at www.air-raid.net. Click on the archives tab and you can listen to it all right there for free, streaming on your mobile device. That's all you need to do, right? Yeah. Actually, you know what? Michelle Weller of Seattle, who sent that very constructive email, also donated to the show. Yeah, she donated $75, man. That's some more money that we can use in the coffers here in the backyard. That's right. It's going to keep us running. It's going to pay the rent. It's going to pay for new equipment that we sorely need here in the backyard studios. So thank you so much, Michelle, for the constructive email and for the donation. You guys can donate, too, just by visiting our website and clicking the donate tab or the donate button right there. Because, yes, this is a labor of love, and we love doing this show, but it does cost money. So anything you can kick us is greatly, greatly appreciated, because as you've noticed, we do not have a sponsor as of right now, and, you know, we're still searching. Plus, I'm lazy, so it takes time. That's right. All right, let's get into it, man. This was really surreal for me, as it would be for most people, because I had to go down to Benaroya Hall here in Seattle, which is a big opera house. Famous opera house, by the way, and got to go backstage and sit in Duff McKagan's and Barrett Martin's. Do you know who Barrett Martin is? He is the drummer for Skin Yard and for Mad Season and all that, all these amazing bands back in the 90s in Seattle. And sit back there and wait for Duff to get there. And all the time I'm sitting back there, Pearl Jam's walking around, frickin' Chris Cornell from Soundgarden's checking in. And then we start talking, and these guys just start poking their heads in and trying to make us laugh while we're talking, man. It was the most surreal thing ever. I mean, whoa, Chris Cornell trying to make me laugh, trying to break me up while I'm interviewing somebody. That doesn't happen every day. It was crazy. All right, this conversation with Duff is just fantastic. And before we get into that, we're going to be featuring music from Duff's band Loaded. This song is called Follow Me to Hell, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Duff McKagan, founding member of Guns N' Roses, Velvet Revolver, and Loaded. All right, Follow Me to Hell. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Watch your kick and flail as you take your last breath. If the fall first didn't break your neck, to break your curse. Follow me to hell. Been severely underprepared many times, to the point where I have made some pretty egregious mistakes with facts, which facts, is extremely embarrassing.
If
by
they're
the way.
Facts, you probably want to get those right.
Yes. But now I pride myself on not having my facts straight. That's a whole thing.
That's an angle. It's a good angle.
Thing.
That's part of your shtick.
Right. Yeah.
No, it's just part of my shtick.
People listen to this show to not get the answers.
Right. Got you. Okay. and I'm not familiar with the show, so I didn't do my pre-research on your show.
Man.
So I'm just going to, I know, I'm sorry.
Wow.
I blew it as an interviewee. I trust that maybe somebody has. And sure. you had it all going for you because you're from Seattle. So anybody from Seattle go, okay, yeah, I'll do the interview.
It just works out, yeah. Right. Well, I've never been to Benaroya Hall before. This place is it's pretty posh backstage here.
It's a legit place.
Yeah,
it's
Have you ever played here before?
I have not played here.
Yeah?
Nope. I did something for the Seattle, the Northwest Sports Awards.
Oh, okay.
Here?
Yeah.
Once, gave an award away.
Sure.
A couple years ago. But no, I rehearsed here last Friday with the symphony.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to a couple gigs here.
Yeah.
And this place is designed for sound.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's a union house, so there's union workers here.
Right.
And I've played union houses
before. Does that get a little annoying sometimes, though? Because, you got to take the breaks and stuff at a certain time, and everybody's got to clear the stage off. You can't even be on the stage, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I've gotten used to it over the years.
Okay, I'm sure you've played places like this before.
Oh yeah, New York, every place you play.
Yeah,
whether it's Roseland or Madison Square Gardens or their union houses. So your crew can't touch the gear.
Yeah, you can't even, and it belongs to you, but you can't touch it when it's on the stage, right?
You can't even move it onto the stage.
You
can load it off into the loading dock, and then at that point, it's theirs.
Yeah,
so you kind of go by their. It's very interesting, the union. But these guys are chill. The Seattle Stagehand Union, they're pretty chill compared to some other ones in the country.
Well, it's probably they're more chill towards you guys because you got the Seattle cred
maybe
behind you, right?
Maybe.
That could be it.
Yeah.
You're a very intimidating character. You're what, 6'3"?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll can I swear? I can't really swear.
You can.
I'll fuck you up, man. I'll just straight up... fuck you up. That's what I do. That's what I'm known for.
That's what you're known for. Right.
Oh, don't mess with him. He'll fuck you up.
So I was reading your book, and the first one, It's So Easy.
Yeah.
I just finished it last night. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for reading it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I blew through it, man. I'm not a big reader.
No.
And I can't find the time for it much anymore. I've got two small daughters myself.
How old are they?
3.5 and 9 months.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is a good time.
Nine-month-old just started crawling.
Yep.
She's all over the fucking place. She got into the fireplace last night. That wasn't great.
No. But, and you got all the plug-ins. You got all the things.
Yeah.
You got the door lock.
We need to start getting that stuff in again.
Yeah. Oh, you took it out.
We took it out, man, because she couldn't move. And I get very anxious when stuff, clutter bothers me.
Oh, just put all that to bed, my friend. Clutter is going to be your life.
I know already. Yeah.
Yeah, of course you do.
Yeah.
And you have to just kind of accept it all. And when we finally took the last booster seat out of the car,
mm-hmm.
right? So you got the baby seats backwards,
yes.
then the frontwards, mm-hmm. and then they get up to booster seats, kids, and then
right.
we took the last booster seat out. There was so much. You think the car's clean?
Like
it's not
Cheerios,
clean.
Raisins.
Old peanut butter and jelly stuff.
Right.
It just,
right.
you can, it'll never come out. Sorry
no,
about this.
No, not at all. Not at all. But like I was saying, I found this familiarity with you in that book when you started getting your life back together and starting getting sober.
Mm-hmm.
You started watching a lot of war documentaries.
Reading, yeah. And
reading about that kind of stuff. Are you still interested in that kind of thing?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's there's a lot of conflicts to read about.
Oh, yeah.
And
never
in
ending.
That, it teaches you history.
Sure.
And it teaches you history repeats itself to those that are uneducated.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
don't care to look back and go, well, this was tried once before.
Exactly.
Or you can't do that in that region because this is how this region's been like that for 6,000 years.
Right. These previous conflicts.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're totally. Going to try it now.
Right.
Oh, because exactly. why? Because we have, anyhow.
Yeah. I was going to suggest a couple of good
go
ones
ahead.
For you if you haven't seen them. The History Channel has these ones called World War II in HD.
Love it.
Then there's Vietnam in HD.
God,
see, I just saw them this week because
it's been out for a while.
I know, but they finally got put on Netflix. I don't have cable.
Okay, well, you're a Seattle hipster guy, right?
Well, apparently, I got the rolled TV. Up cuffs on the. On
you do. I noticed the cuffs and the boat shoes.
That's right.
Nice work.
That's right. Yeah.
Zipped up a little. You got the thing. Do you ever see Allison Chains? The thing they did on Funny or Die for their. Last record.
No. Uh-uh.
It was like a webisode to promote
okay.
the record. And they were all like these, like real Hollywood makeup and stuff, noses, fake noses. And Sean Kenny plays like the hipster
uh-huh.
who hates Alice in Chains.
Right.
And he's got the cuffs and he's got a bike, like a single speed bike.
Sure, sure. A fixie. Or something.
So yeah. And his website, his name was something. And yeah, my. I blog for my own website called Fixies and Cuffs. That was the name of this website. And it was just genius.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Allison, I hate them.
It's
actually, have you heard them? No, I've never listened to them. But I just
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing, though, especially here in Seattle, it seemed like it was very prevalent, especially back in the 90s, was you couldn't like anything else, right? If you liked something else, then it wasn't cool, right? Was that
right.
prevalent down in L.A. when
well,
you
see,
were down there
here's
doing
the deal.
Guns N' Roses?
Let me just tell you my history with that kind of attitude.
Sure.
I grew up here.
Right.
And I'm of an age that when that first wave of punk rock hit, I was mm-hmm. 13.
Yeah. You're playing in bands like the Farts and 10-Minute Warning and the Fastbacks.
And punk rock or alternative music or whatever you want to call it
mm-hmm.
was about accepting whatever, not being that, because like there was cliques. There was like the jock clique, and there was this clique and that clique, and the bunch of us weird musicians, we wanted to be anti-clique and just kind of, so we would listen to AC/DC.
Sure.
And Prince and Black Flag and Motorhead kind of came out and kind of melded a couple things.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd listen to UFO and the Avengers and so when I noticed Matt Cameron, he would know about this too. So, you know, punk rock was about being open-minded completely.
Yeah.
And didn't matter what the guy wore, walking into your thing. It wasn't fashion. Although, you know, there was probably some of that in there. But
yeah. So you never had a problem with that? Like you were just a full range. You would listen to like country music and pop music and stuff like that back when
oh,
you were
yeah,
a,
yeah,
when
yeah.
you were
Cameo,
a kid.
Come on.
Yeah,
I was
well,
just
can't.
Addicted to that record.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah,
Cameo. I mean, everybody was into Cameo. Come on.
Yeah, and Sly and the Family.
Word up, man.
Just like candy. come on. Dun, 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 dun. We could go on for a little while. But yeah, and growing up in a big family like I did, and being exposed to all kinds of different music from the Stones and the Beatles and Zeppelin, Hendrix, Sly and the Family Stone, the James Gang, it was just like this big thing. And when punk rock came, it's like I can start a band. My brothers just showed me three chords. I know G, D, and A.
I can
Let's
do it.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. So, you know, I know the 90s, like, you can't like this, and you have to like this, and it's got to, the name of the band's got to be something like Wolf's Breath, or, you know, whatever. Right, you know, right. We got into pretty precious areas.
Sure.
Well, that's fine. That's just young kids being...
Well, and that's what I was going to say, too. Like, I was part of a whole different generation, like, experiencing that music. You were steeped in it. I'm 34.
34, yeah. Right, yeah.
So I was kind of coming up in that as a fan, right, over on the Kitsap Peninsula,
right,
in Kingston. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, it was totally different for us who were outside of what you guys were actually doing and making the music. You know.
Sure, yeah, you're 34. So, yeah, I mean, hey, we all, like, I have two teenage daughters. Like, it's all cyclical. Yeah. I've been listening to their music, you know, for the last 17 and a half years.
Sure.
From all the stuff when they're little kids to into Taylor Swift and Hannah Montana and Hilary Duff and going to the concerts. They're your daughters, man. You're going to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
I can't wait. I can't wait to take my daughter.
Yeah, it's
to
so
concert.
Fun. It's cute. And there's a bunch of other little kids. Yeah. And then Justin Bieber hit.
Yeah.
And all, but then it's gone from that to like really, my older one's gotten into, suddenly she discovered Lou Reed. So it went from Taylor Swift
that
to Lou
must
Reed.
Have been a cool experience, right?
Like Lou Reed, you really, okay, Dad, isn't it Perfect Day of like the most perfect song? I'm like, yes.
We're breaking out the vinyl.
Yes, that's a perfect song. Is it a perfect song? And then she got into Bowie and then Stooges.
Yeah.
Why,
yeah.
Dad, why don't you tell me about the Stooges? She'd have dance parties with her girlfriends to Funhouse. You know, it's like, okay, she's going the right direction.
Did she know that you know Iggy?
She didn't. I'm just her goofy dad, you know? Like, and then she, you know, fell in love with Mark Lanegan's, that Imitations record.
Oh, my God.
Dad, do you know Mark Lanegan? I said, yeah, babe, Mark Lanegan stayed with us when we were a baby. He had the fence put in the backyard because he had a bad dream you were going to go into the water.
Oh, my God.
So that fence is because... You're kidding me. No. Do you want to go? Dad, he's playing next week. We go see him play. Yeah, let's go. And then we walked in. There's Grace, all 5'8" of her now.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
hasn't seen her for a while.
Uh-huh.
And he was just blown away. But, yeah, there's now she's making connections that Dad... It's kind of cool. Like, kind of cool-ish.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Because that's my only dream now.
Yeah.
Is that my daughters will grow up and appreciate what I have done. You know? It's going to take a while. Yeah.
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 And now, like, we work out together sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do some kind of cool, like, she'll go do this hardcore thing I do. It's like hot yoga with weights.
Oh, God.
And she'll go with me. Grace, you want to go? She's not too embarrassed, but she'll set up her mat on the other side of the room.
That's not man. That sounds awful.
No, but
hot yoga with weights.
But it's just an hour. Okay. But it's good, you know, something to do with your daughter. Like, let's
sure,
go do
sure.
this thing.
Bonding time.
Yeah, let's throw down.
That's great, man.
But enough about my. You know, you got a lot of good things to look forward to with your two little girls. It's just good every day.
I'm taking my 3-year-old is now super into Star Wars. Which
cool.
is a great thing for me because I am a huge Star Wars fan, and so we're going to the EMP opening night tonight.
Tonight,
yeah.
Right?
And I'm going to take her, and she gets to see Darth Vader in person, and she is so excited. So that's like my first, like, you know, run in with that whole world where my daughter and I can share an interest. You know,
that's
which
awesome.
Is just great.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, man, I remember going to movies with thinking my kids at that age, like Tigger, you know, all the movies.
Oh, sure.
And
as
a parent, you lose it. I would cry in the movies because, like, Tigger, he was just looking for his family, and they were there the whole time, Tigger. There was Mrs. Rue and, you know.
I've seen that movie 13 times.
They were there the whole time, you know, just bawling in the theater. And your little kid just open mouth looking at this, you know, watching. So you go to, yeah, you do all that stuff. You ball at the.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I cry at these Pixar movies like a fire hydrant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So let's go back a little bit. You said that your brothers were playing music when you were growing up here in Seattle?
Yeah. There's a union call right there.
There you go.
That?
Get out of here.
Orchestra on stage in 5 minutes, and they mean it, too. Not, it's not 5 minutes and 20 seconds.
No, no. Better be out here.
Yeah.
So you picked up a lot of, like, your musicalness,
yeah,
for lack of a better term.
At my house.
At the house.
It was just laying around the house and being played at the house, and there was guitars, and I could, you know, I think sixth grade is when my older brother Bruce, left-handed, and so I write left-handed, but I kind of throw the ball right-handed and stuff, and so he taught me chords on his left-handed guitar.
Right.
But then he moved out of the house.
Yeah, yeah.
So the left-handed guitar left. And so when I wanted to play, all there was a right-handed guitar. And so it just kind of, I think like learning ambidextrously at that point also helped me to play drums.
This is Wrecking Ball by Loaded. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ear. Stay with us.
Fire.
Parents listened to a lot of music.
Parents were much older than, so my parents were Depression era parents.
Right, right.
So they're 40 years older. No, it was the kids took over the stereo.
Okay.
It was eight.
Well, that's
freaking
nice.
Kids. Yeah, then there was no room for
my
parents.
You guys had the power pretty much.
There was Mills Brothers records in the pile, which I would listen to.
Sure.
Amazing stuff they did with their, you know,
probably some Nat King Cole. I'm guessing.
Yeah, Johnny Mathis. Like,
there you go.
A lot of old big band, John, sure. You know, stuff. But there was just records, and records were so cool when you're a kid. And mm-hmm. I'm kind of glad they're making a comeback. Like, my daughters are looking at, I have the records back out now.
Sure.
On the turntable again.
Yeah.
And, Dad, why'd you ever get rid of your old turntable? I don't know. It's just things were moving fast. So, but we used to grow up, you know, and just sit and listen to records and look at all the other piles of records, all the records are sitting there. And,
yeah.
And your imagination just kind of ran wild. And didn't have a cell phone to take your attention away from it.
Sure.
Or a computer. Sure. It was like you were just there.
And you had to focus on it, too, because, you know, if you wanted to listen to a different song, you have to go over and pick up the needle and put it on the next track.
You would
track,
go on the journey, you know, of the record.
Right,
and,
right.
I mean, I still think of when we put records together, like the Walking Papers just finished recording a record. So now I'm thinking of sequence, and I still think of, okay, start strong and build up, drop, and end of the first side.
Right.
Then start the second side. Whereas probably a 34-year-old guy wouldn't think of sequencing your record like that. You would like.
Well, I've been in bands, and, yeah, and that's always like, for me, that.
Do you sequence for vinyl?
No, no, right. But we never did vinyl. But even just putting it on CD, you think about like where you want and how you want people to hear it.
Yeah, the peaks,
right?
And valleys. Yeah,
yeah. For us, it was never wanting other people to hear it because nobody ever was going to ever hear it. It's just like, how would I want to listen, yeah, to this?
Well, that's the way you got to do it.
You know, sure,
that's
sure.
Any band you're in, you know, when we recorded Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses, we weren't thinking anybody was going to listen to it outside of our little fan. It was too left field for popular music, for crying out. That wasn't going to be popular music. It wasn't going to be played on the radio. So,
right,
yeah, you always sequence and record and write songs for yourself.
Yeah.
What feels good. And,
sure, sure.
Unless you live in Nashville and are like a professional songwriter or something. You know,
yeah.
There are those that are wonderful writers. I don't know how you do that. It's like a formula.
I think you've got it down, though, man.
But you know what I mean.
Sure,
yeah,
sure. There's always doubt.
And you always write for yourself. So if it feels good to you, that's where it's got to start.
Right.
And
right.
I still go by that, you know, thing. And I think I've goofily kind of tried to step into the area of like, I'm going to try to write a hit song. It just falls apart immediately. Once you say those words, it's gone.
It's never, yeah.
KD, and you let this, you know, it's just stupid. You know, like try to write some dumb lyric that's like universal.
Comes out so cliche.
Yeah, yeah. That's awful. That's,
you know, talking to people like yourself, it always fascinates me that you guys, you know, even though you're up on top, you're kind of on the upper echelon of where musicians in general would like to be, but you still struggle with the same thing that every musician struggles with. Is this the dumbest thing that I could sing? You know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, of course. Musician, you know, I don't know, you know, whatever echelon. I think that's an outside perception. You know,
you've made it your business, right?
I've been fortunate in that has become my business. I do other things. I write. I do other things for business too.
Right.
But at like some point in my life, I'm like, this is how I'm going to make a living. I think it was like 42. It was like 8 years ago.
You were 42 when that finally hit.
Well, Velvet Revolver kind of really took off. And
sure.
I'm like, okay, well, I guess It's my career is an ongoing thing, you know, to have a record that did extremely well when you're 42, like in the rock world.
Right.
Oh, I guess that's when you realize, oh, it's not an age thing. Oh, right. And then you start looking at, you know, Bob Dylan and the Stones and the Aeros, all these bands that are ZZ Top, Black Sabbath, they're all 20 years older than me.
Sure.
Then you start feeling like a young pup. It's like a rebirth sort of thing.
Sure.
When you have that realization, this is the way I make a living. You're 42, grow up and admit it to yourself. This is what you do. This is
right.
And it's a great feeling.
Yeah.
You go through all the artistic struggles. I think when you lose that is probably when you stop giving a shit about the music you're putting out. I would imagine.
I would say that's probably a safe bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm as neurotic and fucked up
as ever.
As a 19-year-old kid trying to write a song. Yeah, like, this sucks. This is great. No, it's not.
Listen back to it.
No, that was the
scrap all of it.
Why did I think that was good? I'm a failure. Self-doubt, yeah, keeps
what
you.
What were the thoughts going through your head? You said something very interesting to me, is that you finally realized that you could do this, or that you were, you know, a professional musician at the age of 42, but you guys had accomplished a lot in, you know, since Guns N' Roses had disbanded. I mean, what were the thoughts roaming through your mind? I know you were, you know, you were getting a handle on being sober at
yes.
that point in your life.
So I was at 30. I you know, had to make a decision.
Sure.
And I, so I, there was a sea change in my life, complete sea change in my life. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly it's about athletics, martial arts, and
right.
pushing myself and mentally and getting a center of centering up all my stuff, you know, my,
sure.
my and then meeting my wife and having kids and going to Seattle U, figuring out my money, you know, like
right.
I didn't want to be 38 and broke. And so I didn't know, I was busy raising kids and going to school, and I had started Loaded here because I couldn't just stop playing music.
Sure.
So Loaded would go play in Japan, you know, at spring break when I was in school, or and then the VR thing happened, and that was big commerce. And I was actually,
wasn't Guns N' Roses big commerce though? Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, but that Guns N' Roses was so much. It was so long ago at that point.
Sure. Okay. Okay.
It remains big commerce because we held on to our publishing.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, and there's you know, T-shirt stuff and all that. I had to keep dealing and licensing our songs.
Yeah.
That was business, but you can't be a A-type personality like myself and just deal with business that you've already created
right.
for the rest of your life.
You have to keep going.
You got to create. We're creators. Right. We're musicians, you know? Yeah. So you have to create new stuff, whether that was going to be a new financial business. Was I going to do that?
Yeah.
And like be of service to musicians, my friends? Or, you know, I knew I was going to do music, but when the Velvet Revolver thing hit and Slash and I and Matt started playing together and then added in Weiland and we wrote the songs and put out that record, it became okay. So I'm going to be creating music and be playing big places. I'm figuring this out again.
Yeah, yeah.
Creating a new kind of legacy.
And by that time, too, like you were saying, you were taking college courses. You were learning the business side of this stuff.
Yeah. So I was able to attend
to it. You were able to really
yeah.
get into it there.
Yeah, and it was great.
Protect yourself.
It was awesome at that point because yeah. I went back into the big leagues of the big labels and the major labels. And I took them, and people were terrified.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, does he know more than I do?
One of the stories that it had me laughing was when you guys were called up by the exec that had bought out Geffen and had let your solo project go.
Oh,
and wouldn't
oh
release
God.
the rights
yeah.
to your own music
yeah.
to you. They wouldn't even sell it back to you.
No, they would sell it back to me.
At a profit, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They wanted $250,000.
Yeah. But I just wrote all those songs. You want me to pay
right.
for my songs that I just wrote and recorded.
And so VR starts taking off,
mm-hmm.
and this guy calls you guys up
yeah.
and wants a meeting with you.
Let's
and just starts to spill all this bullshit about how family, rock and roll family, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, and you guys just strung them along.
Yeah.
How'd that feel?
Because everybody in the band knew my story and knew about this,
sure.
this guy. We'll
yeah.
go nameless. Big music executive guy.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's like, oh, let's not take the meeting. I'm like, oh, please, let's take the meeting. Let's do that.
I love this so
let's
much.
We got to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, karma. Like, dude, I mean, the thing is, the guy never called me back then.
Right. When he said he was going to.
Yeah.
The story.
I take people for their word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my deals are handshake deals. Even with management for VR, handshake deals. You got my word. And your word should be good enough for me. And we'll
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
And if I sign a contract, then your word's not good. Then I'm stuck in a contract with you.
Right.
That'd be the dumbest move I could ever make.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. It's like having a knife fight with both your arms tied to each other.
Right. Let's handshake, look each other in the eyes, and this is what we're planning on doing. If we got any, you know, obstacles in the road, they're going to come. Let's talk about them.
Sure.
And don't, you know, don't overpromise me. There's a lot of that going, you know, especially down in California, yeah, in L.A. There's a lot of overpromising.
Sure, sure.
Hey, bud, I've been through this before. Don't promise all that. Let's just take one step at a time. But this guy, yeah. I've always lived in that. I grew up in a good family, you know, really mm-hmm. good, and around good. I have good friends and good people, and the guns guys. We were all good dudes when it came down to it. Mm-hmm. And so when that guy in 97 who had bought, was with the huge conglomerate that bought Geffen, said he'd call me and let me know. No. I took his word for it.
Right.
And when
call
he
you
did,
and let you know if they were going to pick it up or not.
Yeah.
Or put it out.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to take a winter vacation and I'll call you.
Mm-hmm.
And he never did. He had some minion call me finally. We had to, like, search and find the minion, and we had to actually track down the minion. And then I felt, you know, there's resentment and anger starts up in there, and that's not a good thing for a guy like me. We found the guy, and I thought, okay, I learned a lesson. That guy is not a man of his word.
Right.
I know that. And somewhere deep down, he knows it. So I'm cool with it now. Like, I've dealt with the resentment. And I did it kind of right away. And luckily, I was in martial arts. And my sensei's like, you know, giving me the, well, he has to live with that. And you know, you have the knowledge that he is not a man of his word. And that's, in some ways, that's power to you. And you can move on through this. And
yeah.
Yes, sensei.
I need some of that in my life.
Yeah. Well, man. Square some stuff away, you know. You don't want to carry somebody else's. You don't want to build somebody up too big in your head and then get failure. Or you don't want to, you know, you make one mistake with somebody. It's somebody's fault. You know, you make another the same mistake with the same. You expect different results this time. You know, about third time, who's crazy there?
Right.
That guy or you?
Or you for getting back into it.
Yeah.
Do you think you were a little bit crazy for getting back into something like Velvet Revolver
with Weiland?
Another singer that had emotional issues.
We
or drug issues.
Yeah, we looked into that. The guy, Scott worked really hard mm-hmm. at the beginning, and we did a lot of stuff together. A lot of physical and mental work.
Right.
And went up to the mountains of the Cascades and. And really, before we even made the decision, we wanted to see who that person was. He really wanted it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we were, I think Matt sort of said it perfectly, like, afterwards. I saw some interview on some documentary with him. He's, like, really kind of just cuts the chase.
Uh-huh.
Hey, man, if you're going to go to the strip club and you take the stripper home, you know, the next morning she's still a stripper, man. You know, or whatever. I don't. He said it in a way more eloquent way, where it's just like,
sure.
I don't know.
it makes sense.
He said it in works. A way where it was funny.
Yeah.
It didn't cut down strippers. It didn't cut down violence. It was just like, yeah, we got one really good tour out of him, and we really had it. And me, as the guy I am, I was really hoping for himself that he would pull this together, because he has two kids and a wife, and that was on top of so many other things. That was like at the top, like, dude, you can be a father for your kids now.
Yeah,
this is gonna be awesome. You know, you're gonna be around and present, and your wife, you can get her back, and it's gonna be awesome. And but there's some, you know, Scott, I still think highly of the guy.
Yeah.
And because I got to experience another Scott for a good period of time.
Yeah.
And I wish the best for him. It just didn't work out. You can't do business with somebody who's high, who's struggling like that. You can't, if you can't make gigs and you got to pull yourself off the road.
Well, yeah. And that, you know, from reading, you know, not only your memoir, but other biographies about other bands and stuff like that, like,
you know, being in such close quarters with each other on buses and in vans and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. Sometimes.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's look, all of us fellas have
oh, sure.
dealt with it. It's not like, I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see a drug addict. That's my family. I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am that. I'm one little step away. You know, you say you're one step away from being a homeless guy on the street. I'm one step away from being that and a drug addict, you know, mm-hmm. really. So every day I have to.
Do you still struggle a lot with that?
I wouldn't say struggle's the right word, but I have to remind myself on a daily basis. I had a relapse at 10 and a half years sober.
Right.
On some other, it wasn't booze and
Xanax.
It was Xanax. Right. And it took me, swept my feet right under me,
mm-hmm.
right from out from under me. And so I know, it's like, okay. It was kind of a cool reminder, actually, to be honest with you. It was like, oh, yeah. And it is progressive. They say that addiction is progressive disease. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. 10 and a half years into it,
yeah.
when I got into Xanax and it was up to 20 milligrams a day in like 3 days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it means your tolerance never stopped.
Right, right.
Going up.
Yeah.
And you go back into championship level use.
Sure. Your body still has that reminder still built into it.
Yeah, I put the championship, right. you know, belt on and everything. I'm back on top. Back on top at the
bottom. Yeah, and that's a scary thing, too, because that happened when you had kids and you had a wife. You had a stable home life.
I did, and I was away.
That's some scary shit.
Man. I was away in Europe,
right.
and I was lonely, right. and there was some other crap going on that I'll never go into. It's nobody's business, but there was other stuff going on, and I thought it was a really great idea to take one of these for stress. Not what they prescribed to me for. I had them in my bag for years for panic attacks.
For panic attacks.
Never took them. Just having them in my bag was good enough.
Sure, sure. Knowing it was there.
Knowing it was there.
Like an anchor.
So, anywho. But so I don't judge people who are actively using it now because I know that. And a lot of the addicts who are presently using or are sober now or who have passed that are good friends of mine, some reason there's something about it. They're all really intelligent, all really funny,
sure,
enlightened people. Now, whether you know that term ignorance is bliss, maybe these are the people that just have too much going on in their head and they need to dumb it down a little bit. There's
right.
too much
right.
information. I really believed in that for a while. I lost some really close friends in my 20s. One guy was a genius.
Uh-huh.
He was an absolute genius, like graduated Berkeley, Cal Berkeley, when he was 19.
Wow.
He was this rock guy. He was killer. He was like the coolest guy around, and he just, I think there was too much information.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you got to dull it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've got that personality trait in myself, you know, and like dealing, I mean, I never got to the level that, you know, you and your friends were at. I don't think I ever hit a real bottom, you know, but, you know, I needed to get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, a lot of people with those addiction problems, I mean, like you said, a lot of them are very intelligent people.
I just, maybe that's just in my life with the people I've met, you know?
I think it's totally true. Yeah. I think it's totally true. And I think you can chalk a lot of that stuff up to life experience, right? Like somebody who has traveled the world is going to have a different perspective on things than somebody who has just stayed home.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting, though. That's an interesting point.
Like I totally know about, you know, like the UK is right next to Czech Republic. And,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
It's right next door.
Right, yeah. Right.
I don't know. That was just a dumb attempt at humor. Where are we going?
I'm sorry. I was listening to I didn't even catch it. I was just going to say, okay, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, no, now you were giving me the courtesy. Yeah, that's funny. I don't know what you said.
Okay.
I noticed it.
So, this book comes out. It's so easy. You talk a lot about your experiences in Guns N' Roses. You talk a lot about the strife that went on, the inner turmoil that was going on in the band, along with what happened in Velvet Revolver. when this book comes out, did you tell Scott and Axel and Slash that you were going to be talking about this stuff? Did they know this was going to happen?
Yeah. But, as you know, it's always he's not a tell-all.
Right.
So it's not...
It's more of a memoir about what you were experiencing.
Right. So yeah. I had to use, of course, people I was around at the time, because a man does not live a life alone.
Sure.
And but I didn't give up their secrets. Mm-hmm. And I didn't tell... I wrote about how some of this stuff affected me, especially my intake levels of alcohol and drugs at that point.
Right.
And that was the arc of my story.
Yeah.
How a normal kid from Seattle gets that bad.
Into there.
And then his way out. You know? And that became the arc of what I was writing. And that's the story I went with for that. And I did tell people I was using them in my book, but that was by no means a tell-all. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you notice in the book, I never even talk about women I was with. It's not like... And I never really mentioned how much I was doing. I don't want people like, oh, dude, that guy was... You know, there's always that drug bragging, drink bragging.
Sure. Yeah.
Didn't do any of that. It's just like by the narrative sort of falling apart at some points of the book, I was hoping to get the reader into like, oh, wow, his brain is like going... It's
I think you succeeded at that. And I wanted to tell you, too, that... At some points in the book, the way you wrote about it, especially the points at which, you know, it's this whirlwind and this downward spiral that you're experiencing, it's very Gonzo-esque.
Right.
Yeah. It's very Hunter S. Thompson type, put the reader right in there with you.
You know, I was reading Blood Meridian at the time. I was writing those parts, which is Cormac McCarthy. Have you ever read it?
Yes.
Very stark and dark and gnarly. And
his writing style is insane. It's like The Road, you know, it's so sparse.
When the little boy says, okay, it just crushes you.
God damn it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're reading a book, you want to fall on your knees, you know?
Well, it's so like I was saying, it's so sparse too. It's like, you know, it's just like a list of words on the page, but yet it lends itself to like creating all this inner imagery in your head, you know, of what they're experiencing. It's just great. And I thought your writing style really reflected that.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. I read a lot of really good writers. I got to write a bunch of columns for the weekly.
Right.
And get my chops going. Sure. And for ESPN, which was different chops, but was still writing. So I got a lot of experience using $5 words and just because I know the word. And then sometimes you do as a writer, I'm going to use this $5 word because I'm a smarty pants. And then you kind of come to grips with what works for you. And Billy Idol wrote a book, and he wrote it himself, his new book. Uh-huh. And he, I'm Generation X fan from back in the day, and Billy's become a good buddy of mine. He's a very intelligent man. And he wrote this book and slaved at it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And he really did a good job. He found his voice, a voice.
Uh-huh.
And the book's really good because he found a voice, and then the book carries on.
Yeah.
Like, you trust this guy. It gets dark and gnarly and stuff, but you still trust him.
I want to read that.
Yeah, it's good.
It's out?
It's out.
It's out now? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds cool, man.
But I have a new book, as you know.
Right.
It's based on a column called How to Be a Man that I had written for. I titled it Man Up.
Yeah.
For the Seattle Weekly, they changed the title, How to Be a Man, of course, because it gets more little clicks on the...
Right.
The clickety-clacks.
So it's all about clicks, man.
It's all about clicks. But the clicks got me a book deal from the column.
That's great.
And it was basically, the column was funny. It was like, I'd just gotten back. There was a guy who climbed up. I was at a festival in Europe somewhere, and the guy climbed up on top of the PA speaker, the singers, young and kind of drunk. Like, the crowd wasn't totally full. It was kind of, and he got up on top of the PA speakers. You know, you're supposed to jump at that point.
Right.
And he realized it was too high.
It was too high.
And there was not enough people to really and like that crawl back down.
Oh, God.
And so I said, you know, if you're going to do something like that, you know, fellas.
Yeah.
Take a look first. And don't be the guy crawling back down, you know, backing down off the PA speakers. And that's basically... like the man advice I'm giving throughout the book. But it goes into like parenting. You know, that could also go into parenting.
Don't overdo it.
And don't ever have to back down in front of your kids.
Yeah.
Like, be sure of what you're doing. And it just kind of runs through all these things that you and I have learned and what I've learned from my friends and funny stuff. And it's all packaged into a 6-month ridiculous tour cycle that I did last year.
Right on. And when's that coming out?
It's Father's Day release, man. Whoa. But I think they're doing it May 20th, but it's on DiCapo, which is a really cool publisher.
Awesome.
So
and now I heard something too, like are you working on a book currently about Guns N' Roses as well?
I am not.
You're not. Okay. I thought I heard that somewhere.
You heard wrong.
I totally did.
You heard the wrongest information.
Yeah.
No, I'm good for writing right now. I might start writing a column again.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm working on developing a show with a guy from The Walking Dead, with one of the producers. And I'm writing it, and it's about like Hollywood in 1984. 85,
really?
When the cops had just left after the Olympics.
Right.
And that's when I just moved there.
That's when you just got there.
So I have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
And AIDS was still thought of like a homosexual.
Uh-huh.
You don't remember this.
I was just born.
You were just
1980,
born.
1980. So
yeah, so there was this whole thing like needles and sex. It was still kind of the overlap of the 70s.
Right.
But more dark and fucked up. So we're writing this really, again, Cormac McCarthy influenced thing of that. So it's
kind of fun
to write.
I like that idea.
Fiction.
That sounds pretty cool.
Fiction.
Yeah.
Historical fiction, I guess.
I like it. I like it. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with me, man. I really appreciate it.
Okay, good job.
For taking the time.
Thanks for coming down.
Yeah, definitely.
Right on. Barrett Martin? He's the smartest guy in the room, by the way. Any room. Stay there with me. You don't stay for what I do. Sleepless night. I drug you through. When I say the things I don't mean to, you stay there with me. You uncover. Well, how was that, man? That was awesome. That was so great. Oh my god. Duff McKagan. Rock legend, sitting down to chat with me for a little while. That was fantastic. What a surreal experience. As I said in the beginning of this episode, which happened to run long, by the way, now that I'm sitting down here and editing this whole thing, it ran a bit longer, and I was, even after those emails, what can you do? It's a podcast, right? I'm a narcissist. I like to hear myself talk. I love the sound of my own voice. Hey, the book that we referred to many times in this episode is called It's So Easy and Other Lives, or Other Lies, that came out a couple years ago by Duff McKagan, and it is a fascinating, fascinating whirlwind of a tale about his history of drug use and how Guns N' Roses was formed. And how Velvet Revolver was formed, and I would really, really recommend reading this book. It was great. I'm not a huge reader of books, but this one, it took me like just a couple days to get through, and I wouldn't even say, that's the wrong term, get through. It didn't even take me getting through it. It was, I didn't want to put it down. That's what it was. And it's a fascinating, fascinating story about being a rock legend, man. Being up there in that upper echelon, as I said during the interview. Being in a band like Guns N' Roses. It's just crazy, man. And just like the expectations and everything weighing on you to continue this because it's a money-making machine is unreal. Absolutely unreal. And I urge you guys to go and check this book out if you haven't already, because it did come out a couple years ago. But anyway, his new book
is going to be coming out on May 20th. And after the interview, he was nice enough to say that he would love to come back on the show and do an actual, like, sit-down interview here in the backyard. And so hopefully we will be able to line something like that up when the time comes around. So, man, god damn, it would be awesome to have Mr. Duff McKagan back in the backyard, man. Seriously, to just talk about, the whole experience, right? Yeah, we got some of it here, but man, I'd love to do it again. Love to do it again. I don't know what it is about me. Maybe it's because I'm an addict myself, and I love hearing the drug stories. I don't know. It just makes me relive all the stuff that I know I can't do anymore. Right? Yeah, that's it. That's it. Why? I don't know why I'm laughing at that, because it's pretty sad, actually. It's pretty sad. All right, folks, remember, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can get us on Stitcher Radio. Hey, if you're listening to us on iTunes, why don't you leave a little star rating? That stuff really helps in the grand scheme of things for podcasts. We like to be up there in the ratings, and it makes more people kind of check us out and everything like that. So, leave a review. Leave a star rating, even if you don't like it, man. Just be honest, you know? Just be honest. And you can send us emails if you have some constructive criticism, like our listeners Michelle Weller here in Seattle, or Dana, wherever you lie. You can email me, Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net. And also donate to the show by visiting www.air-raid.net. And check out the archives tab there, too, where you can hear all 233 episodes with the likes of Chris Walla, Macklemore, Mudhoney, the Melvins, Presidents of the United States of America. Oh, man, the list just goes on and on with comedians like Pete Holmes, Hari Kondabolu, Eddie Pepitone, man, Aisha Tyler, Scott Aukerman. God dang it, man. We've had some great experiences on this show. Great experiences. It's just a wonderful thing. We love doing it. So I hope you guys continue to listen. Okay, let's do this, shall we? Let's close the show out. You heard a little bit of it already. This song is called Wasted Heart by Duff McKagan's band Loaded. And we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. We hope you have a good one, everybody. Thanks for listening.